Hi there, this is Serena Telly, and you're watching CMS TV. Stay colorful.
You saw this article or not, but it was like a very slow news day, obviously. But Eddie Trunk talked to the Tesla boys, or Brian Wheat specifically of Tesla.
Okay.
And Brian basically said they're not going to do an album anytime soon. And fair enough. And you can talk about it more than I can. Mm-hmm. Bands are going away from albums now. Like,
right.
It's just becoming a more of a singles thing. The albums don't have any value to you guys for the time that it's not worth the time you invest, I think is the best way to put it. Is that fair?
Definitely fair. Definitely yeah. Fair to say.
But with this article, and this is why I wanted to bring this up, with this article, he says some things that I really need you to comment on, because I know it isn't true for your band. It's not to say it's not true. It's not true for the way you work.
Okay.
Brian talks in here that the only way... Well, let me try and find the quote. I'll find it while I'm looking, but I'll tell you basically what he says. He says the main reason that nobody can record an album these days is because the only way to do a good album is to lock yourselves in a studio together for a year and hash it out through demoing. And they're like the only band that still does that, right?
Yeah, probably. I think most people are just sending each other stuff back and forth these days. I mean, maybe ultimately when they record the album, they go in somewhere together for anywhere from 2 weeks to a month if you're doing a full album. Get everybody in there and just kind of put the final touches on it of that live feel, perhaps. Because there is something that when you're doing the handoff work, mm-hmm. where... okay, I did my tracks, now you do your tracks. Sometimes it could come out good and it can work, but it could be a little stiff, especially with like rock music. I think rock music needs to push and pull. Like right. A song like Back in Black doesn't have a perfect tempo. I think it pushes on certain parts of it, and that's what makes it so awesome. And you can only do that really... I mean, I guess you could program, obviously time changes, but it gets more... whatever. This is stuff that just real live bands kind of do together. Tesla's one of those bands, so I can dig it. But no, I mean, you can, maybe they don't want to do anything less than that, but a year of being together.
That was the time that he said, where's it at here? He said just to do the one song that they just finished recording. It's not even out yet. This It's All About Love song. They spent 6 months recording.
Wow.
6 months.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. That must be a pretty broad answer or description of it, of how it went down.
Is that one guy working one like for a month and then sending it to the next guy? I can't believe
these guys could
have been actively, okay, today we're going to work on drums, or today we're going to work on the chorus. Right. You know, I don't believe for a minute. 6 months for one song? That just sounds nutty.
Right. Well, I mean, their schedules within the band, I don't know how that works. I mean, they're all playing. They never seems
they're
like
together.
They're together. It seems like they're always on the road.
Yeah.
So they're obviously not in one location for 6 months. I mean, but I could understand, you know, maybe a week somewhere. But you would think at this point in their careers, one of those guys would have a legit studio in their house or something.
And I have to, I know that Hannon does. I mean, Hannon has his own record company, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
He has a studio.
Nowadays, there's no reason why they can't do something that sounds as good as mechanical resonance.
Yeah.
Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Resonance, right? Mm-hmm. There's no reason they couldn't do that in a house setup recording with Pro Tools or Logic or something. I would think that they'd be able to do that. Yeah. I mean, and you know that Tesla level band's going to have a little better. I mean, they might go into a real place. I don't know.
Here's the quote. It's different now. See, what people don't realize, for a band to make an album that's really great, you have to get locked in a room for about a year and really hash it out and argue and make demos. And then what you're doing is you're fabricating 10 songs, and you'll usually have two great ones and then the other ones that are kind of half-assed mm-hmm. written, unless you spend that time doing it.
Right.
Now, look, I'm going to go two records back for you. How long did you guys take to write and record Smash?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, really, both of those records, Smash and View to a Thrill, I had written the music part of it, not the vocal part. He did his vocals, but all the music aspect I had been writing on my own time,
right,
where I wasn't getting paid for that. I had reflected today upon View to a Thrill, where I was all in on that, trying to write it. It was like, and that one was a lot harder because Smash had already come out, and then this next one had to be out in the next 6 months.
Right.
So I really put everything into that, for better or worse. But I remember one point my electricity got turned off.
Okay.
At my apartment. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the woman I was dating actually like helped me out and paid. It was like $300 for a one bedroom apartment that was like several months behind.
Right.
On it. So I wasn't paying my bills. I was just sitting in there locked in my apartment trying to write enough compositions, good enough stuff that he would be able to do something with it when we ultimately went into the studio, which that part took close to 10, probably 10 days plus the mix days. So, you know, looking at like 2 weeks to do those records on average, right. But all the writing part, most of that was me doing these demos the best I could do at home. We ultimately had the real drummer, Greg D'Angelo, the first on Smash, and then Scott Coogan on View to a Thrill, would come in. He would listen to what I did on the drum machines and then play their version of it over the tracks. I would be able to do stuff like my guitar solos at home and just kind of email those over.
Sure.
For some reason, those sound better like that than when you try to like do it through a real amp. But rhythm guitars, I would go up to Matt's and we would hash those out. So the instruments were real, you know, on those records. We took the time to track them. We had Steven come in, got the best performances we could get from him, and, you know, spiffed it up a bit and got it going. But that's where we are today. You know, when Rat was doing their records in the 80s with Bo Hill, there was like millions of dollars on the line.
Right.
They were spending easy $1 million back then. You know, which was God knows how much money that would be, at least three times that today.
Yeah, but I don't think if anybody listens, and I like to point to Smash. I just think Smash is the better record, personally.
Right, right, right.
But if somebody listens to Smash, and then they go and listen to Detonator. That's before the breakup, right? Detonator.
Right. That was their last record before.
Yeah, that's one with Shame, Shame, Shame and Love and Use a Dirty Job and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if they go and listen to Detonator and they go and listen to Smash, I don't think that there's like any sort of audio quality drop off. In fact, I think that it's pretty close, actually. Right. I mean, it doesn't sound exactly the same because it's obviously different guys, but
sure.
But it's sonically
right
as solid. It doesn't sound sterile, which is what I think Brian is trying to say here, is that if you do it through trading and whatever, it gets sterile because it's not the guys in a room. I don't know if you guys just did it really well, or if it's, you know, if maybe Brian is not aware of doing it that way, so he has a perception of how that goes.
Yeah. I mean, the record might have been different if we had the time where, okay, I have my ideas of how the drums should go, but I'm just going to come in with my guitar and play you these riffs, and you play the drums how you think they should go. Well, you go about it that way, it's going to drag it out. You know what I mean? And everybody's going to have their opinion, what's better. It can open up arguments. The way these went down, it was more like Steven and I's record, Matt, of course, Thorn engineering it and playing his bass and putting in his two cents of kind of being the tiebreaker if we were at a question about how something would go. And he's the most musically inclined, you know, so when it came to like what key we should have him sing in or a note he should hit, he could get on the guitar and figure out what the right harmony note would be or something right. like that, easier than he and I would. I mean, Steve and I both have great ideas, but we're not like highly musically, you know,
right?
Trained. And like with Rat, they had Bo Hill, you know, producing. They had a more seasoned person like organizing the whole thing. So we didn't have that. We didn't have really a producer aside from on Smash. I Can't Take It was given to Bo Hill, and he did do a mix of it for us. That was pretty cool, you know, and he had some good ideas. A couple of his ideas went on the final thing, you know, to do a solo in the beginning. I did that. He edited the solo slightly, so it came in again at the end. He had cool ideas he did with Steven's voice. You know, he was the one who repeated some of the lines. So there's these hit maker guys that know how to make something a little more catchy for the radio.
Sure.
Or whatever that the band doesn't always have. Now he just worked on that one song. The rest was just us kind of self-producing. And it was really just, you know, probably, you know, I kind of self-produced the demos to pretty much the same as they are. It's just obviously sonically they needed to be done in a more pro place. Sure. Matt had that. I agree with you. Like for Tesla, I think they should be able to get something on par with Mechanical Resonance out of a place like at least Matt's or something, not some.
Yeah.
I don't know what Frank has at his house. I don't know how good that setup is or not. Has he ever released his record company? He has.
They've released music that's been recorded there and it sounds fine.
It sounds fine. So, yeah, I don't, it shouldn't take all that time, but what takes time is writing the stuff. Is the band writing it together, or is the situation like me where I was like doing all this work and then, you know, and to do it again, I would really need to get all the ducks in a row and have a good payday involved. 'Cause that's just like working on something for 6 months where the other players are brought in more as just a hired guy for the day. Hey, we need drums for a day or two. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're not getting a residual thing. They didn't like write the songs. You know what I mean?
And maybe it's too, it could be the creative way they do business as well. Right. Like I don't think Steven is a guy that sits there and listens to every note. I think Steven listens to it and is like, that's cool. I like it.
He puts in his two cents, but if he doesn't have to be there to do his singing part, he's not going to be there while the guitars are being done or the drum. He shows, hey, it's vocal day. We need you here. So he comes in. He's also hearing the rough mixes from the day of as the music gets developed. He gets a rough of it that day to kind of see what he thinks of how it's going or if he has an idea about something.
Does he write lyrics too? Does he write all the lyrics?
He writes most of his lyrics. Okay. You know, there was, you know, we'd help him with a line here and there, you know, or just had a something on the melody line, but he would do a lot of that. I don't want to say secretly, but just separately.
Yeah.
Really. So, I mean, if I had known what he was going to sing, would it have changed how I did it? You know, maybe. Right.
Do you give him ideas? And I'm asking because I really don't know. Yeah. Like, do you say, I hear this tune and I'm thinking about the Illuminati, like on 10 Miles Wide? do you have that thought and then you relay it to him and then he writes something to it? Or do you just give him a piece of music and he said, oh, cool.
Sure. The only thing that I would put to besides the vibe of the music itself is I'll put like a working title.
Okay.
For it. And sometimes like 10 Miles Wide was just something I just thought up and put it as the working title. And he ended up liking that and using it as part of the lyrics, which he'll often do, you know, but then there's times where he doesn't and he just totally changes the title of it. It could go either way. One funny one on Smash was the song Jamie, where he was doing, I don't remember what he was doing exactly, but it wasn't that great, or we had criticized that we could probably do something better. Okay. And I had said, this is like a Big City Night Scorpions, you know, kind of chorus I'm looking for here. And then he was like, you know, Hey Jamie Knights. He put Knights. I guess you can't say Knights.
But it's her name, Jamie Knights.
But it is, you know, I ended up then singing on it. I did the, you know, can you hear me calling? You can hear in the background like an answer to it, which was what I sang to him, that I heard that, you know, and so I just went in and sang it. So there's times where I sing on the record here and there. But this was, like, as I was saying, just mostly between Steven and I and Matt, kind of, and then anybody else who played kind of came in drums, usually just drums, and got the drummer, and then they left. So it's a lot of work, man. I was thinking, for me to do a whole album, like it would be 6 months. I would need 6 months to write an album from scratch that was any good.
Okay. So do you agree with Brian then that you would have to write 10 songs to get 2 good ones? Or would you write 10 and keep working on those 10 until they were good ones?
That's probably accurate. But I mean, in rock, it was like that for a long time.
Right.
You know, where you were lucky to get 2 good songs and then a lot of filler. And if there was some like album that was like a top 10 diamond album, they probably did throw a lot of money at it and spend a lot of time. The Wall or whatever.
How many songs? See, this is fascinating to me because I don't know any of this stuff. How many songs generally, and they don't even have to be full songs, but it could just be like song ideas or, you know, parts of a song or a full song, do you come up with, and then once you get to the phase where you're trying to add lyrics to it, you just realize it ain't going to work. Like you write something, you're confident in it, even if it's half a song or a riff or whatever, you give it to Steven and he tries 15 different things and it doesn't work. And then you finally say, yeah, this isn't meant for Steven. Does that happen?
Oh, yeah. But I usually will try to have some idea of something in my head, but I don't try to influence him in any way. Like, let's see what he does with it first. And then when we get into the studio, if it's I'm not liking what he had or I think what I have in my head's better, I'll what about this? Right. And then I might even get on the mic in the studio and sing it as a guide track. And then he might go, yeah, I like that. Okay, let me try to follow that. And he'll sing it or do it kind of more his way. But he definitely has his delivery that's his way and certain ways that he'll phrase things or words he'll use where he's like, I wouldn't say that. I would say something like this. And so even if it gave him an idea, he's probably going to change that a little bit.
Right.
Too. And he does, though, to your question, writes most of his lyrics, and he's doing it at home, usually old school, just listening to it, getting it in his head, writing some chicken scratch out on a notebook pad.
Well, dude, I'll tell you what's weird about him is I don't think many people, for as much music as he's done, both with Rat and as a solo artist and with all his other bands, you know, Vertex, Vicious Delight, you know, all the different stuff that he's done, Arcade, I don't think a lot of people realize how musical that guy really is. And it's only like, I'll just tell you from my own perspective, it's only been recently on Facebook, I see him plucking away at a guitar a lot, like a lot more than, I'm going to be honest, up until probably 5 years ago, I didn't even realize he played guitar. I had no idea, you know, and I know what's weird is I know I've seen him play guitar. You know, like in Arcade when they would do Mother Blues, you know, when I saw him do Mother Blues with Arcade in 90, whatever year that was, I remember him and who was the guitarist in that? Was that Frank Wilson?
Donnie. Yeah. Yep.
I remember them sitting down and him playing it, but I honestly, because I was young and naive, I guess, thought that it was one of those, Vince Neil playing guitar things where he's not really playing guitar. He's just holding a guitar because it looks good. You know, I really thought that's what it was, that Steven wasn't really playing. It's only been recently that I realized, you know, he could play guitar and not just at an average, below average level. Like, he could sort of play guitar, right?
Yeah. Vicious Delight tour, which was like a small club tour he did. He did play. He played guitar and he had one other guitar player up there. Okay. And that was kind of cool. In Arcade, I don't know how much he was coming through the PA or whatever. Right. But what I liked about Steven's career is he was pretty stylistic. Like he put out different stuff. You know, he had that rat stuff, but then he had Arcade, which was a more classic rock kind of Aerosmith vibe.
Yeah.
Then he did like the industrial thing with Vertex.
Yeah.
So he likes all different kinds of music, and he at some point put out some stuff like that. And then within our records, we kind of did a potpourri of all that, you know, kind of stuff too. We'd have Zeppelin-y stuff, some Rat stuff, some Priest-y kind of things. I thought Smash was kind of all over the place because it was a lot of demos from all from the previous like 8 years of us sending ideas to each other. And then the next one, the record we did, was more, you know, recently written. But it would be interesting to do a record with other good musicians where you are locked in a room and you got to make this happen, and you put all your musical strength together. You probably would get better stuff. I mean, when humans get together, multiple ones, and put their minds together, amazing things happen. I can only do so much by myself. You know, it's right. Like a one dimension.
You know? Right.
To enter the next dimensions, you need some more brains in there.
Sure. You know, going back to what you were saying about Steven, you know, and his musical taste, he's still doing that. You know, like the cover that you guys just did, not, I can say what it is now, right? Because I think I saw it online.
The Dion one? The Dion?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he did The Wanderer. Now,
right.
In my mind, if I'm thinking, all right, what song is Steven Piercy going to cover?
Yeah,
that's going to be about number 10 million on the list. That's not going to, you know, that's just not going to be one of those songs that you'd pick. But then when you listen to it, it works. And his kind of sleaze metal voice thing that is him, like, it doesn't sound like he's trying to do something outside of him. It sounds very Steven Piercy, very Rat. But yet, very 1965 as well, which is very cool. And you get credit for that too, because I could tell for a fact that you didn't even know the song, and you like learned it almost note for note before you started working on it, right?
I did know. I was familiar with The Wanderer from
Dion. Were you?
That's a pretty big hit song. So I remember hearing it. It in the 80s, it would still get played a lot because it wasn't all that old then. Now you don't hear it quite as often. So he was definitely playing to the older audiences, I think, with that one. But yeah, that was an example of me doing the best I can on my studio here. We've released a few songs in the last year, like the single version, as you were saying, where bands are just releasing like a song at a time. And that's without really spending any money, just time. You know, me having to program drums. We did a Duran Duran cover.
Yeah.
Girls on Film. Now that was that was programmed. Now it takes time, man. It's almost takes longer to sit there and programming each kick and snare than having a real guy come in and just play for a minute. You could probably within an hour get a couple great takes from a drummer instead of having to sit there and go you know, having to do all that crap and get the hi-hats and make it try to sound like a real drum set and get the velocities of each hit that you're programming. It's very time intensive. I don't even know if Steven realizes how time intensive it is when he goes, hey, why would we do this? And it's like, yeah, well, you're asking me to, you know, spend probably 2 weeks on creating something like that. But there's covers that he's wanted to do that didn't make it, or I didn't send it over. One was Apollonia.
like an Apollonia song?
Yeah. Song? Sex Shooter.
Oh, Sex I know Shooter. That song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sex Shooter.
Yeah.
Now, I wish you would have done that one. That would have been awesome.
I found it, and it's like, I did a version. I was it's like, boom, 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 you know, and it kind of on guitar was kind of cool, but I mean, Prince songs are going to be great, you know, whatever. He wrote it. Prince wrote it.
Right. Yeah, it was in Purple Rain.
Yeah, but I was just like, oh man, this is so off the wall for us to do this. I'm like, I actually never sent it. Like, did it. I took all the time to do it, and I'm going, man, I don't know if he's what. I should have maybe sent it, maybe I still can. Yeah. But I was like, I don't know. And what are some other ones we tried? He wanted to do Adam Ant. There was an Adam Ant one that I laid out dangerous but not serious.
Dangerous but worth the risk. No, that's the rest. No,
right, right. I think he might have been inspired to write that title right. from that back then. He was a big Adam Ant fan. But dangerous but not serious.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's Adam Ant's amazing.
And that's the same album that had Goody Two Shoes on it. I remember that.
Right. He's actually still out playing and playing a lot lately.
Adam Ant?
Yeah.
I had no idea he was still alive.
He's going to do the 80s cruise that we just did. He's going to be doing the next one coming up.
Right.
For right. Royal Caribbean.
You just reminded me of something. I'm going to take a hard shift on the topic here. Did you hear CMS at all on Saturday?
I have not. Are you going to keep this page up the whole show?
Oh, sorry. I'm just not paying attention.
I can't see you, really.
I'm just not paying no attention.
Okay, there you go. Hi.
So we were playing, and I don't want you to comment on this part.
Okay.
I'll just say what we were doing, and you can say, uh-huh. We were playing video of Sebastian on that cruise annoying the piss out of the air supply guys. Like he did a walk on their during their set, and it was very clear that they didn't like having him there.
Oh, so you don't think they knew he was going
to
walk out?
I think they knew, but I don't think I'll just leave it to you, and I really don't want to get, because I don't want to cause you a problem with Sebastian.
I saw it. I watched some of it.
If you watch it again close, if you watch it, there's one part where Sebastian is singing like. And he wasn't supposed to be singing. Mm. Like it was before the song started. And the one guy was like looking away from him, like looking at his other guy. And Sebastian goes over and taps him on the shoulder, like, hey, aren't you watching me? You know?
it's here I want to do it. Yeah, this is where the chorus.
It's real. No, it's before the song even started. He was doing like some weird karaoke version before the song started, and then when he wasn't getting attention, he ran over and tapped the guy on the shoulder and was like, hey, look at me. Yeah, look at me doing your song. It was really
scary, because I don't think those guys are big dudes, the air supply guys.
No,
and Sebastian's this giant person.
It was real cringe. And then it was very clear that the other guy, not the guy that has the good voice, but the other guy,
mm-hmm.
hated Sebastian. Like he walked to the other side of the stage, and at one point Sebastian was saying something and he just broke into singing. It was brutal. We were laughing our asses off at it. But Neely asked me to ask you if you guys were still on the boat when this happened, and if you happened to be at the performance. And I told him I thought that you had probably already gotten off the boat.
Jason, he was the only one who got to stay, I think, for the whole 10 days or whatever.
Okay.
We left. So, no, I did not see that. I that would have been hilarious. So I did watch a video recently I happened to see. So I do know what you're referring to.
Yeah.
I thought we were so out of place, Sebastian and Piercy, on this.
Yeah. You know, that's what we said, too. It's like
cruise.
We were like, you know, it's like Ray Parker Jr. and right. Wang Chung. And
yeah.
You know, did I turn my mic?
When off? In Rome.
What happened here?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you if you can hear me.
I can't hear me. Something happened. No,
but I can totally hear you.
All right. Well, as long as you can hear me. Mm. All right. There we go. I did turn it down somehow. But yeah, no, we were just talking about that video. And I said the same thing on the CMS on Saturday, that I could not fathom why you guys were on that gig other than pays the bills, you know.
Yeah those cruises through, you know, are fun. I mean, they do totally take care of you, and when you think of the value that you're allowed to, you know, typically bring your family or whatever, it's a free vacation in a lot of ways, because you're there for 5-6 days, sometimes more. That 80s cruise was like a 10-day thing.
Yeah.
We got off. We didn't stay on this. We left after like the fourth day, on the fourth day. But the value, monetarily speaking, is usually that would be worth like $3,000 to $5,000 a person. Right. You know, sure. to go have a cabin with a view, a port window and stuff. If you the cheapest tickets, you're below You're below deck. Mm-hmm. There's no window. You're just in a small little room, a little closet or something. You know, the rooms they give us are the suites in a way. You know, sometimes they give the bands balconies and whatnot. Those would be super expensive if you're paying for it. They give you discounts, the band's discounts on the drink packages and restaurants and internet that you pay for, because that's where they get you too, is internet. You're going to be spending a good $30 a day to have internet if you're addicted to posting stuff or getting on there.
Wow.
So there's now we're getting also, you know, compensated for playing on the thing too. So that's pretty awesome. You know, you're getting really great payday for a week's work pretty much.
Yeah. And a little vacation to boot, other than the, you know, hour or two that you got to work. Right.
Right. And usually they have the best, people working at the shows and great equipment and everything. They're definitely top notch in that, you know, area.
Right.
So I've learned to enjoy it. I as you know, last year before the first Monsters of Rock one, I was pretty apprehensive. I did not want to go on it. I'm not a cruise guy.
Right.
But now after I've done a couple cruises, I know what's involved. I'm more relaxed about it. I don't have the anxiety anymore.
Sure.
Plus I'm on these beta blockers. So
there you go. Well, let's do this, dude. Let's take a quick break. We'll play a guitar for some guy I know that's selling guitar picks. We'll play we'll play his commercial, and then we'll come back. And you said you got something you want to talk about, too. So hang tight, everybody. We'll be back in a second. It is Chris Aiken Presents.
It's the limited edition six-pick set from Eric Ferrantino's. Get your autograph set today at ericpicks.cmspn.com. $25 includes first-class shipping. I drank a float with the keys to your city. I spent your service down into your life. I'll see the signs that were here for trouble.
What's going on, everybody? It is Chris Aiken from Chris Aiken Presents and the Seth Williams Show, and of course, the Classic Metal Show. And I know you need someone to be told something, right? Whether it's something nice, something not so nice. Maybe you need somebody fired and you just don't have the guts to do it. Maybe you need to tell your girlfriend to hit the pavement. Maybe you need to tell the boyfriend to hit the streets. Whatever it is, I got you covered. Right here with my Cameo, cameo.com/Chris Aiken. I will tell them, and I won't be nice, unless you want me to be. If you want me to be nice about it, I will certainly give the sweetest message possible. But if you need evil with a lot of F-bombs and a lot of words that I just can't even say on any sort of radio or TV program, I'll do that for you too. One more time, cameo.com/Chris Aiken. Buy a Cameo from me, and I will tell them like it is, the way you want them told. All right, see ya!